is a show about technology.
I've got a steel plate in my head. I've got a steel plate in my head.
There's a first aid kit in the next room.
Steel plate in my head from Vietnam. Sorry.
Okay. We have a caller on the line.
Look out.
This is recording. Oh, it's that bonehead said he was in Vietnam. He must be on drugs.
Are you on drugs?
Yes.
Yes. He don't know first thing about Vietnam. He must be on drugs.
Yes.
Okay. From the studios of WRPI in Troy, New York, this is Little Brother, the show where we talk about high technology, low intelligence, what happens when you mix the two, and where, like any responsible little brother, we tell on Big Brother. My name is Chuck Ritter, and I'll be your host for the next hour as we explore this world of the high tech. This is an unknown episode to be announced later, dated the 22nd of December 2001. Fact is, I can't remember what episode we're on, but we're going to do the show anyway, so there. Well, to start with, we're not going to announce the phone number today because, guess what? The phones are out. So, we can't do anything with that. But nonetheless, we do need to remind you that the opinions and views expressed in this program are strictly those of the participants, not necessarily those of WRPI staff or management, Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute, or the Rensselaer Student Union. Responsible parties with an opposing viewpoint may request airtime for a rebuttal.
Isn't that going to be a little difficult to do if the phones are down?
Well, I mean, you can call in, but we just can't put anybody on the air.
Ah.
So, yeah, I mean, if like we're in the middle of a break and you have a comment you've just got to throw our way, you can give us a call at 518-276-6248. However, just don't expect anybody to pick up the phone while we're talking on the air because we can't put you on the air with us, and therefore we can't argue with you on the air.
Right, and you know, if you call in during a break, we'll feel free to paraphrase your point any way we see fit. And put it on the air, and if you don't like it, oh well.
Let the spin doctoring begin. Also, you can send email to us at critter@verizoneatspoop.com. That address again is critter, C-R-I-T-T-E-R, at verizoneatspoop, all one word, .com. And last but not least, you can send us snail mail. The address is Chuck Ritter, care of WRPI, 1 WRPI Plaza, Troy, New York, 12180. So, without any further ado, we did get an interesting email from one of our listeners, and hey, look, the phone's ringing. I've gotten a couple emails from listeners wishing happy holidays and so on, and since this is the holiday season, and this particular one did strike me as particularly interesting, I thought I would pass it on to the listeners. This came to us from Brian Oliver. He says, please accept with no obligation, implied or implicit, our best wishes for an environmentally conscious, socially responsible, low-stress, non-addictive, gender-neutral celebration of the winter solstice holiday, practiced within the most enjoyable traditions of the religious persuasion of your choice or secular practices of your choice with respect for the religious, secular persuasions and or traditions of others, or their choice not to practice religious or secular traditions at all, and a fiscally successful, personally fulfilling, and medically uncomplicated recognition of the onset of the generally accepted calendar year 2002, but not without due respect for the calendars of choice of other cultures whose contributions to society have helped make America great, not to imply that America is necessarily greater than any other country, or is the only, quote, America, end quote, in the Western Hemisphere, and without regard to race, creed, color, age, physical ability, religious faith, choice of computer platform, or sexual preference of the wishy.
Wow, you've got to give me that so I can email it out.
Can you please repeat that? I didn't get it the first time.
Okay, short version. Happy Hanurama Danzamastis.
Yeah, because see, actually what I usually say is enjoy the holiday of your choice. That's just a quick way of saying that whole spiel. Yeah, I mean, it does get a little ridiculous this time of year. At our office, we wanted to do a Secret Santa, except we're not allowed to say Secret Santa, so we had to come up with something else. And last year we had Secret Wizards, which none of us were crazy about the idea. You know, and some argued besides that is, you know, sort of a religious persuasion of some, or it could be viewed that way. And then we got into a whole debate over maybe we wanted to be secret sprites or secret fairies, but we thought the guys wouldn't like that.
Secret stalkers.
Secret stalkers, that's right.
You're going around doing things for these people.
And there was some talk of secret elves, but then somebody brought up, well, elves go with Santa, which goes with Christmas, and it was this whole, I mean, it was like weeks long, the debate. Debate, yeah. We never did end up deciding on anything. We just sort of did it.
Don't you just love political correctness?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Anyway, I guess we ought to get on with some stories here.
You mean about technology?
Well, yeah, that's what the show is supposed to be about. But, given that it is the holiday season, or...
Wow.
I don't like that.
Wow.
That is bad.
That's, See, this is a classic example of high technology gone wrong. Very wrong.
Just stick that puppy
on another track.
Move to the next track.
Yeah.
And see if that one, see if that one's got a similarly sized piece of schmutz on the on the CD. Okay. So we'll start with as usual with the things from the Risks Digest. An article in the Wall Street Journal on the 3rd of December described how a simple data entry error could end up costing UBS Warbung up to $100 million. Dentsu Incorporated, one of the world's biggest advertising companies, was making its trading debut on the Tokyo Stock Exchange after completing one of the year's biggest initial public offerings, a deal arranged by UBS Warbung, a unit of Switzerland's UBS AG. And I'm sure that I've badly mispronounced the name Warbung. It's probably Warbung or something like that.
That's all right. That's all right. It's no worse than Sklerov.
Yes. Anyway. Before the Tokyo market opened on the 30th of November, a UBS Warbung trader entered what was intended to be an order to sell 16 Dentsu shares at 610,000 yen each or above. Instead, the trader keyed in the order to sell 610,000 Dentsu shares at 16 yen apiece. The order was canceled by 9.02 a.m., but not before 64,915 shares, almost half of the 135,000 shares in the IPO, had been sold. The price of Dentsu shares, which had been bid up to 600,000 yen before the market opened, fell down to 405,000 yen, and now UBS is obligated to deliver the shares it sold and will have to buy them on the open market. The article doesn't say anything about sanity checks in UBS's trading software. These, of course, have their own risks, but you'd think that an error of four orders of magnitude in the selling price would at least merit an "Are you sure?" before the order went through. Once again, we see how computers let people make really big mistakes quickly.
As our computer consultant at work always says, computers just do what you tell them to.
That is exactly what they do.
That is, they do That's what you tell them to, no matter what.
That's why coffee is so important in the workplace.
Well, you know, I don't think it's I don't think it's by any stretch of the imagination an accident that Microsoft has in their offices soda fountains that are absolutely free to use. You know, geeks run on caffeine.
Not everybody likes coffee, but almost everybody likes some form of caffeinated.
Now, if someone was
carbonated drink of your choice.
Yeah, this is supposedly,
well, most offices have got free coffee anyway.
Go ahead.
Yeah, this was supposedly an accident, but I mean, couldn't someone do something like this on the inside just to, if they were disgruntled with the company and sell off the shares really cheap?
Well, you know, that's true. Somebody could, in fact, do that. I suppose this would be the time to invoke Occam's Razor, if you're familiar with that one. Occam's Razor is a scientific principle that says that the simplest explanation for something is most likely the one you're looking for.
Right.
It's easy enough to misplace a decimal point.
Yeah, this wasn't even a misplacing a decimal point.
Oh,
this
was
swapping
that?
Two numbers.
Swapping two numbers.
Yeah, they put the quantity where the they were trying to sell 16 shares at 610,000 and they sold 610,000 at 16. So that's, that's pretty significant.
Well, some people out there got a great deal.
Well,
no doubt,
yes,
about that.
Although it turned out not to be so great when the value fell, but,
They probably didn't fall below 16 yet.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right.
16,000.
Let's see. In an extraordinary step approved by a federal judge, a computer expert hacked his way into government-run Denver-based financial systems last summer, created a false account, and later altered yet another account. All this happened without the hacker being detected. Those steps, endorsed by U.S. District Judge Royce C. Lamberth in advance, were revealed Tuesday, December 4th, as part of a court case involving the Interior Department's handling of more than 300,000 trust accounts that it's supposed to manage for the American Indians. A court-appointed master said that the ease with which such the government's computer system could be penetrated was deplorable and inexcusable. In a report ordered released by Lamberth, the special master, Alan Ballaran, called on the judge to seize control of the system. At this point in time, the Department of the Interior's website is off the net.
Yeah, that article doesn't make any sense because the article states he broke into the system undetected, yet if he was undetected, they wouldn't have written that article.
Well,
no, the judge sent him in.
They wrote the article after he testified.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, he was undetected at the time, but because the judge told him to do it, he could come clean without.
Yeah, exactly.
Getting a whooping.
Is that what you call it?
Yeah.
Is that what Sklarov is getting?
A whooping.
Yeah.
Have you found a recent article regarding that story?
The most recent news on Dmitry Sklarov is that he is at this point. Let's see. At the last I knew, they were dropping the case against him on one condition, and that was that if he was called on to testify against Elcomsoft, he would have to testify.
Did he take it?
He did take it.
Hmm.
Now, this has got a couple of interesting side effects. One of those is that he is free to go home fairly soon, I would expect. Second is that it may put him in a bad position with his company, since he does now have to testify against them.
Yeah, but I mean, only if he's, if he hasn't come back to this country, then how are they going to make him testify?
Well, I gather that they're going to try to have him testify before he goes. You know, just take a deposition from him or something to that effect. And then the other thing is that this clears up the jurisdictional issue because now the court has jurisdiction because they're going after Elcomsoft, and Elcomsoft does business in the U.S., as evidenced by the fact that they have CIA and the FBI as some of their clients. Yeah. Anyway, this is a beautiful one here. Some Washington, D.C. police officers say that they are slowing their responses to emergencies because photo radar cameras are ticketing them for speeding when they're on Code 1 calls, and they're being forced to pay the fines. At least three D.C. police officers told the Washington Times that they were caught by the cameras and ticketed while on official police business. They said they and the other officers have been forced to pay the fines and are now on edge about speeding to a crime scene and running red lights in emergencies. Like area motorists, they have little chance of getting a reprieve from the D.C. Bureau of Traffic Adjudication without evidence to present in their defense. Some officers have paid so many tickets that they're no longer speeding or running red lights to get to their dispatched calls, even in emergency situations, according to Sergeant Neal.
Hmm. Wow.
I can picture this, too. Light turns red, and there sits a cop car right at the
sirens blaring.
Sirens blaring, lights flashing, you know.
And just sitting there,
waiting for the light to turn green.
Yeah, I'll meanwhile, somebody's, like, been shot or God knows what.
And, I mean, seriously, I found it rather humorous.
Hostages have been taken.
Well, you remember Railroad Avenue in Albany before they paved over the tracks in the middle?
Mm-hmm.
Those tracks were still in use to, I would say just maybe a year before they paved over them.
Mm-hmm.
And, one thing I found amusing one day, I used to work at Cisco, and, I came out and there sat a train sitting at the intersection of Fuller Road and Railroad Avenue.
Waiting for a light.
Waiting for the light to turn green. It was one of those once in a lifetime sightings,
yeah,
I think.
It's something you wish you had a camera for.
Exactly. Because usually,
a video camera. I don't think like a. You couldn't capture the moment in.
Well, sure you could.
In still film, I don't think.
Well, the fact that the fact that one of the two members of the train's crew was standing alongside the engine. kind of drove the point home a little bit that the train was not going anywhere at the moment.
Hey, I have a question that's relating to an earlier article we ran. Previous show. The CDs, the copy protection so you can't rip the tracks off the discs anymore?
Yeah.
What about just creating an ISO image of the entire audio CD, and then if you transfer that ISO image, would that work?
No, the ISO image is a non-concept because an ISO image covers a single track, and there's no real ISO image involved here. You just have a raw PCM audio stream.
Zibi, you can't just capture the whole disc as one big image file?
Well, no, not as one, no. You'd have to capture it as several. But I mean, that's okay because there is at least one ripper out there that absolutely perfectly emulates a CD player. And the reason why it's not particularly popular is it's not particularly fast, but it is extremely accurate. Mm-hmm. And it works extremely well, and I use it for legal purposes, of course.
Yes, archival backups.
Well, you know, I load my CDs into my computer at home, and I just have it run as a jukebox.
Mm-hmm.
You know. At any rate, let's see. Got an item here that was reported on Cruel.com.
Oh, yeah.
One of your favorite sites, I know.
I love that site. I'm on it every day.
So you've probably seen this one. Are you wondering what happened to that acquaintance from Gwinnett County, Georgia, from whom you haven't heard in a while? Well, you can try www.gwinnettcountysheriff.com and see what's going on. The risks are many and varied, but to get you started, click on the link to see the list of charges against any inmate in the Gwinnett County jail, at the end of which you find the following statement. If you have reason to believe this information is inaccurate, you may submit a request for review to Gwinnett County Sheriff's Department, Records Section, 2900 University Parkway, Lawrenceville, Georgia, 20043. No indication is given of how long it takes between one's postal application to have incorrect details removed and the update to the website, but presumably the interval can be significantly reduced if your lawyer can spell defamation. let's see. German officials are apparently attempting to prove that anyone, no matter how ignorant, can become a politician in Germany. The German federal government and the state governments have agreed to new measures for protecting youth from pornography on the internet. According to the Financial Times Deutschland, all such content is banned from 11 p.m. to 6 a.m. No, this is not April Fool's Day, really. The German government seems to think that when it is 11 p.m. in Germany, it's 11 p.m. everywhere else, and that all of those triple X folks on the internet will happily turn off the sleaze during German day when kitties are awake. It's a sorry state of affairs. The risks posed by ignorant politicians may yet be more dangerous than that of the odd virus and software mistake.
Virus mistakes. Yes, last week I ran around the office making quite a lot of fun of myself because I set off the goner virus. I think it was Monday. I'm not sure. It was a shame I wasn't there to... No, I guess it was 2 weeks ago. It was a shame I wasn't there. I was out of town. I couldn't be on the radio to make fun of myself some more. But I did. I set off the goner virus. I guess Monday they had put the updates on Norton.com. But Friday was when we had updated the, you know, virus software, and there it was, and I was tired, I wasn't paying attention, and click, click, there it was.
Yeah, viruses aren't necessarily a bad thing. It keeps your IT guy happy and employed.
My IT guy was neither happy nor, well, he was employed, but he was not, definitely not happy about it. He was overemployed, as a matter of fact. He's only paid for a certain number of hours.
So he has to rework his contract.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't know. He might get paid for the extra time. I'm not really sure, but I don't know. I would doubt it. Our company's not in the best position right now for that sort of those sorts of extras. But I also actually got one of the people on our mailing list very, very irritated with me.
Yeah, I can understand that.
No. See, this is nothing because the fella obviously doesn't know what he's talking about himself. And he runs a computer store. It's pretty funny. Out in Fonda, New York. And he emailed me and asked me to take him off, and I lost the message. And he called me and asked me to take him off, and I lost the message because I'm doing like three jobs right now. People's jobs. That happens in human services, you know.
Yeah.
And, so the next thing I know, I get an email talking about how he'd repeatedly asked me to take him off, and I obviously had no business behind a computer and had no idea what I was doing. I was completely incompetent. He wrote my bosses, too.
Yeah, but it got done, didn't it?
It did, but you know what else got done?
No.
Yeah, he got a threatening email back from my boss, who happens to be a lawyer.
Ah.
Yeah. See, so, some things got done, including the end of his harassing me.
Good.
So, there you go.
Yeah, I had...
But he was afraid that the virus would get in his network. Now, here's a clue. Delete it. It won't get in your network. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Let me see. I think I'm going to skip that one, actually.
Yeah, that one's no fun.
No.
No.
Let's see. This one comes from Scott Nickel. He says, this past summer, two major grocery store chains in his area installed self-checkout lines, and we've seen these starting to crop up all over the place, really. They're arranged in groups of four with one cashier station supervising the group. Credit card purchases can be signed for at the self-check line on an electronic pad, but sometimes the line's register will prompt you to go to the cashier station to finish your transaction. In other words, credit card transactions for four different stations are handled at one register. On my August credit card statement, he says, I noticed two charges on the same day in the same store. To make a long story short, the charge was finally reversed. The extra charge was for the checkout line adjacent to the one I had used, and was completed before my checkout was complete. It showed up first. The head cashier volunteered today that she had dealt with one other customer who'd had the same thing happen. The only strange thing about the checkout was that at the end of the transaction, I was prompted to swipe my card twice, then prompted to go to the cashier's station to sign the receipt. Swiping a card twice isn't unusual. Credit cards and credit card readers aren't perfect. Having four different card readers connect to one cash register, however, is a new thing. I assume in this case that the system assigned the first swipe to the order from the adjacent line and the second swipe to my order.
Oh my.
Yes.
I just use cash in those things. They even take pennies, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, no, I love it. It's a great way to get rid of pennies because, see, the machine is not going to get short with you like a human cashier would.
Well, that's absolutely true.
Yeah, it just takes...
just takes forever to shovel them all
in.
You ever try giving
pennies to like a toll collector on the New York State Thruway?
Yeah, especially when you've come all the way from Buffalo and your toll's like $3.
Yeah, one of them got really mad at me and he's like,
Isn't it more like 6 or 7 from Buffalo?
One guy got really mad at me. I tried paying him in like 5 cents in pennies and a dime and a nickel. He's like, pennies, save them for your grandkids. And he wouldn't take them. He let me go through without paying. I mean, it's only 20 cents, but...
Wow. Well, yeah. Let's see. Dave Farber submitted that Microsoft Office XP and Internet Explorer version 5 and later are configured to request to send debugging information to Microsoft in the event of a program crash. The debugging information includes a memory dump which may contain all or part of the document being viewed or edited. This debug message potentially could contain sensitive private information. Well,
that's
something worth knowing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've always said no to sending a report.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I even say no when Netscape asks to send a report. You know? Let me see here. Arnold Weisberg, spelled with two S's. Now, that sounds unimportant, but it is. submits that he typed his last name into a document using one of the new versions of Microsoft Word. He thought something funny had happened because it came out with one S. He says, I never misspell my last name. There was a line under the W. Holding the mouse on this line, I got to the following choices. 1. Change back to Weisberg with two S's. 2. Stop automatically correcting Weisberg. 3. Control autocorrect options. Now this, as my grandmother would have said, is real chutzpah. Telling me how to spell my own name. Talk about arrogance. What's next? Anglicizing it, like auto-correcting it to White Hill? And what if I change it back? Will it say, I'm sorry, Arnold, I can't do that? I think in this little example, we can learn a lot about Microsoft's corporate attitudes towards the rest of the world. That is, no one is smart enough to even be trusted to spell their own name right, much less choose what software they'd like to use.
Wow, so Weisberg, is that, I mean, the other version of the spelling that they're giving you, I mean, is it possible that that's a city or something well-known and that's why it's switching it over to that?
I don't know. I've noticed...
Maybe it's a kind of German sausage. I don't know.
I've noticed more and more as you put names into word processors that they're less frequently flagging them as misspelled words. And, of course... The real reason why a word gets flagged as a misspelled word is just because the computer doesn't recognize it. So I gather that they're adding a bunch of new names in.
Yeah.
And some of them have got a search engine that looks for similarly spelled words when it finds one that comes up wrong.
Oh, yeah. I noticed once, I forgot what I was typing, but I noticed that the spell checker accepted Walmart. And it, actually, I think I miswrote it with a dash or without the dash or something, and it corrected me, and it wrote, you know, Wal-Mart, right? But it didn't know how to spell something like, I don't know if it was like Prozac or something, like something common like that, that it should know how to spell.
Oh, yeah.
It just you know.
I do know that...
Large corporate entities, you know, scratching each other's backs.
Yeah, I know. I do know, for example, that Microsoft Word doesn't know how to spell Linux.
Hmm.
Wow.
Isn't that interesting?
We need to take a moment for a station ID. You're listening to Little Brother on WRPI.
WRPI, Troy, New York. We're funky, we're loud, we're mellow and we're proud. With jazz and rock and R&B, with sweet soul music and techno beats. We're rap, classical, urban contemporary and metal. We're Caribbean, Latino and gospel, reggae and blues, Native American, Indian and Pakistani too. We're sounds and rhythms from everywhere. We get down. We are WRPI. 91.5 FM, Troy.
You are listening to 91.5 FM WRPI in Troy, New York. Red Letter Day on Little Brother. And if you like that, tune in tonight at 7 o'clock. We'll have Red Letter Day here live in the studio. And we were going to take your phone calls, and we can't do that because the phones are out. However, hopefully that'll be straightened out sometime in the future. At any rate, that again is Red Letter Day tonight, 7 o'clock here in the studio live. And I hope you'll tune in and listen. Anyway, with that in mind, we're back. So let's get this going again. Yeah, let's get this show on the road.
On the road again.
Just can't wait to get on the road again.
Oh, let's see. I'm not sure I want to run this one. This is actually...
Oh, well, now you have to, because everybody's going to be curious.
Well...
That's like saying, oh, there's something, but no, I don't really think I want to tell you. That's so rude. Now you have to read.
All right. I'm a little bit wary about this one, because it does potentially... potentially introduce a hazard, but I suppose at the same token, it's only appropriate
like
that
people,
I do bring it out because...
Like telling people they can hack into the American Indian stuff isn't the Native American bank accounts. Sure, it's offline now, but...
Well, yeah, it's offline now. It's safe to do. This, as far as I know, has not changed. This came from a submitter to the Risks Digest who requested that his identity or hers...
Uh-oh. Oh, here we go.
Uh-oh. Crying out loud.
It's time to switch to tape.
I think it's time I think I need to make a new CD. I think this
time
one's got a few scratches in it.
Just hook an MP3 player up to it.
Yeah.
I've been contemplating that, actually.
Yeah, yeah. Or, you know, you can use that one as a coaster, maybe.
Or something.
It might be
like
the
hang
CD
it up
player.
On the Christmas tree.
Might need clean.
Oh, wait, I'm sorry. On the holiday tree of your choice?
assuming that cutting down a tree and sticking it up in your living room is compatible with your religious beliefs.
Oh,
or
yes.
Your secular beliefs of choice, or your lack thereof.
Or perhaps purchasing a nice, fiber optics tree.
Just hang it from your rear view
from
mirror.
From Sears or the vendor of your choice. The vendor of your choice, yes.
That of course again assumes that doing that is compatible.
Well, of course. Well, I would assume you wouldn't go out and spend, you know, $100 or so on a fiber optic tree if it wasn't compatible with your beliefs.
I want to know what the story's about.
I know that the American consumers can sometimes be a little bit malleable, but I don't think they're quite that gung-ho about.
Okay. At any rate. All right. Yes. Anyway, this particular writer who requested anonymity said that a while back he had a few occasions when he was asked for his social security number by organizations that he felt had no business knowing it, such as libraries, etc. Following advice from the Usenet social security number FAQ, he asked why they wanted the social security number, quoted appropriate legislation, and was allowed to give a different number, which these organizations presumably want as a primary key for their database or for similar procedural reasons. Needless to say, he says, or she, I used a meaningless word for mother's maiden name and made up a birth date, one per organization. When I have later requested my credit report, I discovered that these silly made-up numbers appear on the report as other social security numbers used, along with their respective mother's maiden names and birth dates. Apparently, credit reporting agencies aggressively merge records in their database. A risk? Surely. Consider the following scenario. First, identify a target for identity theft by name. Common names could work. Use the phone book to learn the address of the person in question. This is all the information you need to know. Apply for a credit card in the name of that person using a made-up social security number, mother's maiden name, and birth date. Doesn't matter if the request for credit is approved, the information you submit will get reported to the credit agencies and they'll merge it into the database with their... to the database entry of the target person based on matching name and address. You now have information that's sufficient to ask for a credit report. Ask a credit reporting agency for, quote-unquote, your credit report. You should be able to do it through a web interface. If you had to give them a mailing address, you could have asked for the report to be mailed to a temporary mailbox address or to somebody else's street address where the mailbox is accessible and you can get to it before the rightful owner does, for example, because you know the owner's work schedule. Examine the credit report. It has the target's actual or primary social security number and other information. Having that, proceed with identity theft in any number of well-known ways. Now, this writer says he actually has a fairly uncommon name, or she does. Maybe the record merging algorithm will not actually work with common names. Does anybody else know about the actual merging algorithms? And if anybody does know, I sure would like to hear it.
You know, but don't call, because we can't put you on the air.
Right. But yep. You can send me an email at critter@verizoneatspoop.com, or you can send me snail mail, care of WRPI, 1 WRPI Plaza, Troy, New York, 12180.
This is not really the same thing, but I remember back in the Commodore 64 days, there was one particular software application, and I thought it was interesting. It was called CreditCalc. And you run this program, you enter one valid credit card number, and it would print out thousands of other valid credit card numbers. Obviously, someone cracked the credit card counting algorithm.
And, oh, dear.
I've never seen anything like it before, but it was amazing. And that was back, 10 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And they may have tightened that up since then, I hope.
Well, yeah. I mean, well, the thing of it is, the algorithms used to calculate what makes a credit card number valid are not really that complicated, and they're at this point in time, they're actually fairly well known. It's just a question of hitting some space in the potential universe of possible credit card numbers, of hitting some space that's actually in use, and that's of course what you need to enter the valid one for. Because presumably the banks at the time were issuing credit cards in sequential order, mm-hmm. and they may well still be doing that. I don't know. Maybe they've decided that it's an acceptable level of risk.
I mean, nowadays they're asking for like the 3-digit extension on the back of the card and all this additional information,
right?
For
exactly.
Extra security, and some have the smart chips in them, and
yeah,
they're trying to step up the security.
The smart chip doesn't really help you much if you're phoning an order,
right? Yep.
Yeah, or online.
Right, exactly. I know a lot of online vendors, because of this very thing, have started adopting a policy of only mailing, of only shipping to the credit card mailing address, to the statement mailing address, or to a secondary address that's been associated with the credit card. So, for example, this causes an inconvenience, for example, in that I may wish to order something in as a Christmas present,
right,
and have it delivered to work.
Right,
and they
will
refuse the order.
Say
because
you just realized
match.
You forgot, you know, I don't know.
You
just realize you forgot to get something, say, for your wife, and you know, and you're like running around trying to get that last minute thing delivered just in time.
Exactly.
Or if
yeah, you won't be able to do that.
You're drop shipping merchandise to your customers as a reseller, and you're charging it to your corporate account, but I don't know if the same laws are applicable for that.
I have no idea on that front. Yeah. I suppose that in those circumstances, a purchase order might be a good backup approach.
Right.
But I mean, for a person doing this as an individual, it just doesn't. I mean, how many people, just individual people, have the ability to write purchase orders and be taken seriously?
Right.
You know. I myself usually will have things shipped to my workplace simply because of the fact that when deliveries take place, there isn't anybody at home. So, I don't know. Jonathan D. Amory writes that he owns a radio-synchronized alarm clock, and that a friend of his has one that displays this same symptom, and that symptom is, when the batteries are running low, it will display the time just fine, but when it tries to sound an alarm, there's not enough power, and it resets itself. Now, since it's radio synchronized, it then starts showing the correct time after a minute or two, and as a result, he oversleeps and gets to work late. But since he often doesn't notice that the clock has gone off and come back on and gone off and come back on, and he wakes up a few minutes later, he doesn't know that this has happened, and it carries on like this for several days before it gets caught. If this was a normal battery-operated clock, you'd be able to tell because the time had reset. Minor risk, but noteworthy.
Goes for several days without realizing that the alarm doesn't go off? Is that what he's saying?
I guess so. And
how do you go for several days and not realize that the alarm didn't go off? Is he a really heavy sleeper?
It happens. You know, I have known people who have been able to wake up just enough to find the alarm, shut it off, and then go back to sleep. You know?
I don't know, but wouldn't, like, again, what was that again? Occam's razor that you called it? The simplest explanation, most likely being the right one? The fact that the alarm might possibly, not be set?
If people applied Occam's razor, I wouldn't have to remind people of it.
Well, I just feel that person is silly.
Well, I'll tell you something, though. I had a roommate once who was able to wake up just enough to reach up to the table that sat at the head of his bed, And slam his hand down on the snooze button, whereupon he would drop back to sleep.
See, that's why you set the alarm clock.
That's why you
and
have
after
a,
he did this, after he did this,
like
he did
times?
This 10 times every morning. So he would wake up like 10 minutes before he was supposed to, he would, you know, honestly wake up 10 minutes before he was supposed to be in class.
And this, all this alarm going off and then snooze button pushing and alarm going off and snooze button pushing, this didn't, I don't know, maybe make you want to just maybe throw the alarm clock out the window or...
Are you kidding?
Know,
I thought the whole thing was rather amusing.
Sneak up on your roommate while he's asleep and put his hand in a cup of warm water or something.
That's why you have to put a second alarm clock under the bed.
Or maybe
like
you could have trucked him. You know,
well,
trucking
I'll tell
people?
You what I did do. Trucking? No.
Yeah, you get the two flashlights and you shine them in their face and you go, look out for that truck! And then they wake up and they scream. That's a great one. That's what I would have done if that were my roommate, but that's just me.
Well,
you're
I'll
talking
tell you
to
what
the person that for a secret non-Santa at work wrapped someone's entire cubicle like a big gift. Right across the roof.
That's true. You were telling me
right,
about
right
that.
Right across the door, too, as a matter of fact. It took an hour. And seven rolls of wrapping paper.
Well, I'll tell you. The thing that I finally did do to my roommate that particular year, because he basically we had some place we had to both be the next morning at like 6 in the morning, was I took, after he fell asleep, I got up and I moved his alarm clock.
Oh.
So what happened that particular morning is the alarm clock would start going off.
He beat the hell out of his hand on the top of the counter.
That's it, exactly. He basically... His routine was he would wake up just enough to go, basically just enough to make some exclamation along the lines of yuck, which I guess was the way he was feeling at the particular moment, reach up, slam the button, go back to sleep. So this particular morning, we got beep, 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 beep. Yuck.
No, what you really
need
to do...
As he's trying to find the...
trying to find the snooze button on his dresser.
You move the alarm clock, and in its place where it once was, you put a bowl of Jell-O.
Or a big blob of shaving cream. That's another one. You put the shaving cream in their hand, and you tickle their nose.
You guys are evil. I can tell I should...
Never sleep near me, because you never know what will happen.
I can tell I should have called home more often when I was in college.
Yeah. Oh, I'd have had some great ideas for you. I actually... when you were in college, I was in high school, and that's actually where I learned all of these tricks, particularly the trucking one. Yeah, I learned that from a friend of mine that had been to Boy Scout camp a few times.
Okay. Let's see. What else have we got going on here? Here's an interesting one. It looks like there's a new wireless standard is making its debut. The IEEE has approved a new standard called 802.16, and this one is designed for long range.
Ooh, that's nice.
Yeah, that's what I thought. They're basically setting it up so that they can use it on anywhere in the frequency range from 10 to 66 gigahertz. Obviously, they're not going to use that whole range. They're going to pick some band and use on an application-by-application and country-by-country basis. But I just find it interesting that that the IEEE has taken note of the fact that 802.11 has become so popular for metro area and wide area networking when you have taken it and jury-rigged it with the appropriate parabolic antennae and so on and so forth.
Now, is it downward compatible with the old standard, the 802.11?
No. It's no more than than an Ethernet is compatible with a T1 line.
Token ring.
You know, I mean, the whole idea is you have something that you would put a router on that would interconnect between the 802.16 and 802.11 network, or 802.16 and your Ethernet, or whatever else you may happen to be doing. But yeah, the whole idea is quite interesting to me. Oh, let's see here. How are we doing for time?
Yeah, we're down, 7 minutes.
Coming down to the end here. I think I saw Faisal wandering around here somewhere, so I'm expecting we'll probably see him sometime soon.
We need to go back to the two-hour format.
We really do. We really do, because...
There's okay. So much... You can't see this, listeners, but he's got a stack
I have
of papers.
I have a stack of papers.
Like the size of a meat notebook in his hand.
And well... I know the listeners can't see it, but here we go. That's the sound of it hitting the table. And that's the stuff that I haven't read yet.
Yeah.
And you're right, we really do need to get back to a two-hour format. I'm going to see if we can do something about that next semester. Let's see. Had a longer article here about the Department of the Interior being cut off of the internet, but we already discussed that, so let's just toss that one aside for now. Basic idea, the Department of the Interior is off the internet because they're too hackable. Okay, covered it.
Department of the Inferior.
That's a good one. That's pretty good. Let's see. Here we go. You were talking about the copy-protected CDs earlier.
Oh, yes.
The world's largest record company will be the first of the major labels to release a copy-protected CD in the U.S. What the heck? This is, like, out of date. But it's got to... Okay, I don't know what happened here. This information is out of date. It's dated currently, but it's out of date. I don't figure how that happened. Let's see. This one is too... Not really appropriate to us here. Ah, here we go.
But we love the inappropriate here.
Well, yeah, I mean, but I as much as I make no bones about my slant against Microsoft, I don't really want to make the show into a full-time Microsoft slam fest. And that's basically what that article would have been. It basically says Microsoft lies. You know.
Yeah, you know, they just released the supposed fix for all the problems with XP.
Do you believe them?
No, not at all. That's why I don't have Windows XP. Someone was telling me he had been offered Windows XP and wanted to wait and see over a year what would happen. I said, you don't have to wait a year.
Our
computer fella told us right from the beginning.
Here we go.
Before they released
it. All right, we'll run with this one then,
yeah.
Because this falls
into
that category.
We like Windows bashing.
A suspected member of the Al-Qaeda terrorist network claimed that Islamic militants infiltrated Microsoft and sabotaged the company's Windows XP operating system, according to a source close to Indian police.
Is that what happened to Windows XP? Is that why it doesn't work? It's all terrorists. Terrorists, I tell you.
Mohammed Afrozi Abdul Razak, arrested in Mumbai, Bombay, on October 2nd, has admitted to helping plot terrorist attacks in India, Britain, and Australia, according to India's Hindustan Times newspaper. During the interrogation, Afrozi, 25, also claimed that a member or members of Osama bin Laden's Al-Qaeda network, posing as computer programmers, were able to gain employment at Microsoft in an attempt to plant Trojans, trapdoors, and bugs in Windows XP.
They don't need to. Microsoft does it enough themselves. It, yeah.
According to Ravi Vivasvaraya Prasad,
close enough,
a New Delhi Information Systems and Telecommunications consultant. Prasad, the moderator of an internet mailing list on South Asia security and information warfare, told NewsBytes that Afrozi made the claims in a police confession. Let's see. Officials in the Mumbai Police Commissioner's office were not immediately available for comment. Afrozi was told... Indian authorities that he was part of the team of Al-Qaeda terrorists that planned to hijack an aircraft in London on September 11th and crash it into the British House of Commons or into London's Tower Bridge, according to the Hindustan Times, which obtained parts of Afrozi's confession. British intelligence officials have dismissed the claims, according to a report last week in The Guardian, a British newspaper. A defense attorney hired by Afrozi's father, a tailor by profession, reportedly asked the court to allow Afrozi to receive a psychiatric examination, but was rejected. Afrozi, who was scheduled to provide a formal confession before the Mumbai court on Tuesday, told the magistrate Friday that he does not wish legal representation and is mentally sound, according to the Times of India. Microsoft spokesman Jim Dessler said Afrozi's claims about the company were bizarre and unsubstantiated and should be treated skeptically. According to Dessler, Microsoft has rigorous processes in place during the development of Windows to ensure the security and integrity of the source code.
Right. See, they like to provide their own bugs. They
Microsoft launched Windows XP in late October. While the company has already issued security patches for the software, no evidence of malicious code in the operating system has been reported. Under interrogation, Afrozi also warned that Mumbai police warned Mumbai police that Al-Qaeda was planning an attack on India's parliament complex in New Delhi, the Hindustan Times reported. On Thursday, terrorists stormed the Indian parliament with grenades and guns, killing 7 people and injuring at least 20. The 5 attackers were killed in the ensuing battle with security forces, according to the Washington Post.
Oh, I want to take that story to work. Hand it over.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Afrasi also told investigators that a team planned a similar attack on Rialto Towers, the tallest building in Australia, according to Australia's Herald Sun newspaper. Afrasi, who hails from a poor section of Mumbai, reportedly received training as a pilot in Australia. Red flag there. The U.S. and the U.K.
A pilot of crop dusters or of jets?
Well, then, of course, the question would be, was he showing any interest in learning how to land the plane? The Times of India reported last week that official sources believe Afrasi is very close to Al-Qaeda, but the authorities find some of his claims inconsistent and too theatrical to believe. The Mumbai Police Crime Investigation Cell is at www.ccicmumbai.com. Mumbai is spelled M-U-M-B-A-I. Prasad's South Asia Security and Info War List is archived at groups.yahoo.com/group/C4I. This was reported from Newsbytes at www.newsbytes.com. And we're out of time. 1 hour just flies by.
It does. But, you know, on the other hand, we're not struggling for content.
Well, that's true. That's absolutely true. So I think on that note, we're going to say adios, and we will see you same time next week. Also want to advise people, if you're interested in the music that we played in the interlude and that we're about to play next, tune in tonight at 7 o'clock, Red Letter Day. We'll be here live in the studio with yours truly. So until next week, adios. Yeah. Looks like your chivalry don't amount to spare.